you just have to keep going. You have to want it enough to wake up tomorrow and do the same thing over.
So it's me being a hustler.
The only way that I've gotten to this point in my life is to try to treat people the way I want to be treated.
Welcome to Ground Zero Growth with your host, Sam Sapp, owner of Lockbaud.
Hey, everybody. I'm joined today with Joseph Russecco, owner of ShoutCloud Studios, a local web development and internet marketing agency in Kansas City. How are you doing today, Joseph?
Doing great. Good to be here with you, Sam.
So you and I are kind of, it's interesting because I wanted to say long-term friends, but truthfully, it's really just been more fast friends over the last few years. And then we've just made a point to actively foster that relationship. So it's so great to have you on.
Thank you, Sam. Yeah, it feels like a long time friends because we've gone fast and deep. And it's been wonderful having you as a friend. Yeah,
it has been. That's really one of the cooler things about business that I don't think people talk about is I feel like networking, you know, you could be the biggest introvert ever and networking is still almost kind of like a byproduct. You can't really run away from too much. You kind of have to deal with people at some point.
You can run away with it, but run away from it. But you're right. At some point, you've got to put your face with another person's face. You got to talk it through. And you are so good at that. And I it's one of the many things I admire about you is your ability to just talk to anybody about anything. And as you know, I've been working on that in my own life with some success. And yeah, you really have to connect with people. And if you're challenged in that way, like I've been, well, then it's a challenge. But thank goodness I'm getting through all that. So yeah.
Practice makes perfect, they say, right?
Lots and lots of practice. If you want to overcome shyness or timidity or the fear of not knowing what to say, go talk to 1,000 people in a span of a short period of time. Yeah.
There are still moments. So this is a little bit of a side tangent I didn't think I would talk about. There's still moments. There was this business like class thing I took Friday, and they had you like write out your inner voice, those negative thoughts, right? And then she goes, okay, now reframe that like you're telling somebody else, you know, you can't do it, you're not capable, you know, that sort of thing. And she's like, and then go around the room and tell that to each person in the room. And I've never had a moment of like, she didn't ask me to just do that, did she? I mean, like, I was going through, I was like, can I just sit here? I need to go to the bathroom. Like, there was an avid screaming. Like, just run, 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 don't. And, I plowed through. And actually, I'm glad I did because I felt way better afterwards. It was kind of transformative.
But yeah, there's actually research along those lines where it's proven that if you talk to yourself in third person, saying your name to yourself, your body and your mind receives that as though somebody else is saying that to you. And that's one of the social anxiety tricks I've learned, and I've been doing this for, you know, probably a couple of years now, because I had an inner voice that was so hostile with myself sometimes, you know, just the screw ups, the whatever. And I would get upset with myself until finally, you know, in prayer one time, the Lord just said, stop talking to yourself that way. And so then the next step was, okay, well, how do I talk to myself? And I adopted a third person loving parent, like the Lord would be, and began to talk to myself, say my name in my mind. And it's been transformative with that inner voice issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think, I think there's something to that. The biggest learning experience for me was, pretty much every person I walked up to and said, you know, reframed it, you know, because one of the things was, I don't deserve it. And then, so I, you know, you don't deserve it. And the teacher was like, I want you to say it as passionately as you would say it to yourself. And so I looked at the person, I was just super dismissive. And I was like, you don't deserve it. You can't. And, every single one of them was like, whoa, you talk to yourself like that? And so it was kind of, uplifting in that I was like, oh, wow, okay, not only am I harsh with myself, I'm apparently harsher with myself than the average person is with themselves. Like, a lot of what went around the room was like, you're not great with time management, or you're not, these very adjustable things, right? It's yeah. like, okay, we'll just get better at time management. You know, it's, and mine were like a little bit deeper, it seemed like.
Yeah, but, yeah. And I, as part of my journey in that self-talk place, I realized that I talked to myself in a way that I wouldn't talk to any other person. Even when I was upset, I wouldn't say the things to another person, whether I loved them or not, friends or, you know, acquaintances, whatever. I wouldn't say these things to anybody that I would say to myself. And I realized then that, man, that's a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. That's huge. When would you say you first kind of started the journey of changing your inner voice?
I would say, you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago would be the time frame for me. Yeah.
How's that transformation been?
Incredible. Incredible. Because now I have an inner voice that loves myself, you know, that's kind, that's forgiving. And when you have that inside of you, you want to give that away. And I've always been kind of an encouraging person. That's kind of just been my thing. You and I share that in common. You're very encouraging, Sam. And we're both like that. And it allowed me to be more sincere and genuine in doing that for others. And I definitely feel like I'm in a better place, a stronger friend, if you will, because I can say encouraging things without the shame of my own heart interfering in a way that's more compelling and powerful, and received more strongly because I live it now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I do. It builds a little bit of a confidence, I'm sure, probably, from the perspective of...
Absolutely.
You know, I say this, and I mean it, and I mean it for myself, too.
That's right. That's right.
That's cool. So, this will be interesting in that you and I know each other enough to where I think we'll do a lot of discussionary stuff, which is cool.
Yeah.
But kind of tell me about... you're not necessarily well, I mean, I'm not either, to be fair, but you've grown up in Kansas City for a while, but you're not necessarily a Kansas City original, so to speak. So can you tell me about where you came from and the story that brought you to Kansas City?
I grew up in Southern California, along the coast, right near the Port of Los Angeles, great middle class to high income neighborhood, although we weren't high income. My father was born in Mexico and migrated to the United States somewhere, would have been in the early 60s. His father was a colonel in the Mexican army, and he had, his father had many families, which is cultural in Mexico, where men of affluence typically have more than one family. And my grandfather had nine families. My grandmother was the youngest mistress or wife. I'm not sure of their legal situation there, but my dad was the second to last of 27 kids. And at a point, so there were a lot of boys. My dad had a lot of brothers, I think more brothers than sisters, and the boys were pretty unruly, as he described it. And at a point, his dad got an apartment complex, apartment building in Mexico City, where he was a lot because of his military duties. And all the boys stayed in that apartment complex so he could keep an eye on them. And my dad, at that point, he had finished high school and went to work for the Mexican government for about a year. And after that, he and a friend decided they wanted to get a job on an American cruise ship that would go up and down the coast of Mexico. And so they did that. They went and got a job. They lied and said they had experience working a printing press, like a manual, you know, set type and that whole deal. And the guy hired the two of them. And, you know, after the ship took off a couple hours into their journey, he says, okay, let's get going. We got a lot of type to set. And they didn't know what they were doing. And he said that guy wanted to throw him off the ship. Anyway, they learned what they needed to learn, and they spent about a year and a half doing that. And then, of course, as part of the regular course of operations for a cruise ship, it would dock in the port of Los Angeles for 2 or 3 days, you know, preparing for the next cruise. And so they were able to get off and go on leave in the little town there. And they didn't speak any English. And at a point, my mom and dad met. She didn't speak any Spanish. She's Croatian by birth, and they couldn't speak to each other, but, you know, the language of love took over, and they eventually dad got off the cruise ship and got a job, started working in restaurants, started as, you know, dishwasher and busboy and kind of bartender, eventually became a restaurateur in the area. So, unfortunately, at a point, Dad went and followed his father's footsteps and kind of had multiple families himself. And so he wasn't around a ton. I got to see him regularly, but he was always working and stuff. And when I was 19, mother had developed cancer and passed away. She was young, 46 years old. That was hard. Prior to that, I had been going to church.
Well, that's a young age for that too.
Yeah. Very young age. She had smoked quite a lot of years, and lung cancer is what finally got her. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I had been going to church with neighbors since I was.
And you're still in California at this point,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, still in California.
8, 19.
That's right.
Mother passed. Okay. Yeah.
I've been going to church with neighbors since I was about 8 years old. My family weren't church because we were Catholic, but there was no activity there. And I had some friends who knew a church out here that had some conferences and things. And we came in a couple times and visited and came to the conferences. And I was amazed by the Midwest. I had only known Southern California, you know, busy, no greenery to speak of in terms of, you know, between properties. Came out here, you know, the roads are widespread apart with a lot of greenery between them. People in the grocery stores were nice and kind and friendly. It was just a whole different atmosphere and experience. And so one of the folks that I had come here to Kansas City with a couple times said, "Hey, we're moving." You know, and I said, I'm going with you. And so did that, moved in 91 and never looked back. So this has become my home. So, yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about some of the fires that are going on over there? Because I haven't been following it super closely, but it kind of sounds like that the fires are kind of around where you came from, right? Or am I missing?
Yes. Yeah. So they are further up the coast.
Okay.
Palisades is, you know, north of Santa Monica. We're south of the airport. We're very much south there. So not affected at all. It's obviously a tragic situation there. I've got two half sisters who are closer. I was not aware of this until this weekend. I was talking to one of my sisters. I have four sisters, two full sisters, two half sisters. And I was talking to my oldest sister, and she was saying that our two half-sisters are potentially affected. They've been warned to prepare to leave if it comes to that. And so far, even as of this morning, that hasn't happened yet. So there's different fires out there happening. Yeah, tough situation. But thank God my family's safe so far. Yeah.
Amen. Yeah. So, how old were you then when you first moved to Kansas City? Well, and I kind of wanted to, I think you were probably a little bit older. Can we dive more into what is it like for a 19-year-old to lose their mother? And in my understanding, your father isn't necessarily hugely involved at that point anyway, based off your just cursory discussion. That's overlay a little bit with my experience. I don't even know if I had a full license at 19. I'm sure I got made fun of, maybe will be made fun of now too. I was on the road and moving probably somewhere in there, but I don't know if it was 19 or 18. It was later than it should have been. And just now getting out of the parents' house right around 18, 19, you know, and definitely still plenty of learning to be had. I don't know what that would look like without that. So can you kind of help me navigate that?
I would say your mother, Buster, was not the best mother. She had a lot of challenges herself. She dropped out of school when she was 13 and kind of lived on the streets for a little while, had a friend, and they kind of did that together. She had a rough life and was street smart, but wasn't necessarily the best parent. And so there was a lot of having to figure things out ourselves. I was the only boy, so my sister's experience is a little bit different when they talk about it than mine. Me, I very much felt alone and isolated, and they didn't quite feel like that. So I felt like I had to learn some things on my own, and I did. Got my driver's license the day I turned 16. Had jobs. I had been working in my dad's restaurants from the time I was about 9, just busboy and different things. And so, I will say the one thing my father gave me, and unfortunately, I feel like it's just the one thing, is a good work ethic. I mean, he would come around if there was any sitting around or standing around, he was like, get to work. There's always something to do. Unless you're on break, you're working. And he had to repeat that talk with me dozens of times because I was young. But by the time I was older, I was not afraid of work, and I enjoyed it. It was an escape from other things in life. You know, I worked hard in school, got good grades, you know, and so, I was functional. Granted, there were things I didn't know, right? Because we just can't know everything. But by the time I moved here, I was ready to be an adult and figure out how to do all that stuff, you know.
So what I'm hearing is by 19, you'd already been working for, 10 years, essentially. And you'd already had a driver's license, been driving around for 3. So you were an adult well before that point, basically.
I'd say, yeah, a dumb one, but yes.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So was Kansas City also kind of an opportunity for a new beginning for you?
It really was. And it was a journey into the Lord in my faith that and I felt like it was destined. It was just a whole new level of, you know, church and friendships and all sorts of things. Yeah, it was great.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's good. So what was your first kind of role getting into Kansas City?
Well, so I came here to go to school, to kind of go to a Christian training center type of situation. And I had some money saved up. I quickly...
And was that IHOP by chance? That's a pretty popular one.
It was the early version of IHOP. And
okay.
You know, Chris, they've got many challenges today, and they've had some challenges over the years. But my experience there was pretty great. This was back again in the 90s. And they had a lot of folks coming from different places around the country and around the world. And so I ended up getting a townhome in North Kansas City. Remember we talked about that one time, it was across from that one school off of 64th or something like that. There were 5 of us, and that was a great experience. You know, 5 young guys all seeking God and, you know, doing good things. And that was quite a great experience. And then I went to work for the church for a while as a janitor. They had many locations, and so I was able to earn some income, you know, doing some janitorial type of stuff. It was great. But there were challenges, but it was great. Yeah.
What were some of the challenges? I mean, you're in a new town. Sounds like you were blessed in that some friends came with you.
Yeah.
So you have a little bit of a support structure there?
I would say, not as much as I would have liked. They were a young married couple, and I was a single guy, and We didn't go to the same location of IHOP, so we really kind of disconnected, and they eventually ended up moving back within a couple of years, whereas I stayed. So yeah, and I haven't been in touch with them for some years. So yeah,
that's fair. Okay. But I'm hearing, though, you're scrappy at an early age, though, too. Is it a safe personality read that you're at this point not that unused to getting by, figuring it out?
I would agree that with that. I had to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, but can you kind of walk through some of those? What kind of are some of those challenges that you did have to overcome?
Well, I would say, so, you know, when you're young and even at our age, you don't know what you don't know, right? And I think the biggest challenge was relationships, navigating being a friend to others and allowing friends to befriend you. And, you know, I was timid and shy, didn't have a lot of, good relationship experience. And I definitely, I had fears and anxieties. And a lot of times I would have feelings of anxiety that I said something wrong to somebody or did something wrong to somebody, or they're mad at me. I haven't heard from them. They must be mad at me. I must have done something. A lot of false guilt, I carried. And some of that was from my home life for good reason, because I did have some things like that happen with step parents and different things. And so I carried a lot of false guilt for a long time, which, has affected me even until these last couple of years, where I've been working on my own self-talk, because a lot of those voices were planted early. You're not good enough. What's wrong with you? Why are you a bad person? Stuff like that, right? So, those were probably, there were other challenges, just practical things. You get car problems, you need money, you're, paying bills, and I need more work, and there's not, there were all kinds of different challenges. But looking back, the biggest challenges were the emotional ones, for which I didn't have answers for, and I wasn't vulnerable. Like, you and I've spent a lot of time being vulnerable with each other, but that's not something I knew how to do when I was younger. Because in my mind as a young man, if I was vulnerable with you, you would see how horrible I am, and you would go away. And that was, that was a real fear for me. And obviously, that wasn't necessarily the truth, but that's how it felt for a long time, right? So,
well, I think it's just kind of interesting, because I think throughout childhood and maybe even in the high school and stuff, we create this weird world where it's like we're supposed to be this version of normal, right?
Yep.
And that creates a need. I mean, I think we all have a need really for external validation in some form or another. At that point
we do, and we seek it out whether we realize it or not, right? I mean, that's
right.
That's where you get into friend groups that might not be the best for you, whatever. We seek out validation whether we realize it or not, and so you're absolutely right about that.
At the end of the day, it creates an interesting world where we're not as genuine as we should be, only to kind of realize, I think if we keep on the path of development, only to kind of, at least something I've come to realize is there really is no normal. And on top of that, we don't want that. I think as a society, we tend to kind of reject that. I mean, there's a reason that actors and actresses that'll show up in meat suits garner a lot of attention, and it has to do with, and it's like, well, it's because it's something nobody else would do. And it's like, exactly. It's something that nobody, it's not normal. We don't want normal. That's not interesting.
Right.
That's right. Cool.
And so, which is freeing, because if we were to really deep down and recognize and be our most genuine self, we would realize that we're pretty unique and different.
That's right. And special. Frankly, all of us.
So why try to fit in somebody else's mold?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah. So shortly, I was working for the church. I was going to the training center, and I at a point I met my wife, we got married, and quickly I needed to do something different. And so I, you know, looked for different jobs. I'd worked with her dad. He had a lawn and landscape company. So I mowed lawns for him for, you know, a year or 2 years, and really enjoyed that, kind of the outdoor work, which I'd never done much of. I was always doing indoor work type of stuff, and that was enjoyable. And then I got a job working for Equifax, the credit company, who they had a lot of different services. I went to work for an insurance services division where they, you know, the premise of Equifax is actually information gathering is kind of their premise, right? Credit is the one we're all familiar with, but they would do information gathering for insurance services. I would do, learn to do insurance premium audits where, you know, commercial insurance policies a lot of times are based upon the amount of payroll or the amount of revenue a company generates in a given year. So the insurance companies have to go back and audit those books to determine what those values are and what changes need to happen to premiums as a result of that. And so I became a premium auditor and got quite good at it. And I really enjoyed it. And I had an opportunity to go to Phoenix to a field office out there that needed help. My wife and I at the time said, hey, why not do that? That sounds like fun. So went and did that, spent 5 years in Phoenix and had a good time there. It was lonely for her. Eventually we came back to Kansas City, had an opportunity to go work with a friend who was working for an e-commerce company at the time. And this was e-commerce in the, you know, 1996, 1997, when e-commerce wasn't, the internet was brand new, let alone e-commerce. And met with the owner of that business and went and moved back and went to work. It was really interesting because I was not a programmer or anything, but I really loved computers and really wanted to become a programmer and dive into that world. And that was kind of the start of where I am today. And it was a fun journey to get there.
Well, it's exciting and interesting because I'm also recognizing, you know, you're clearly a fast learner.
Yeah.
Probably partially because of those situations you've been in where you kind of had to be.
No doubt. Yeah. I did early on, I think, whether this was from my dad or just from myself, I really felt early on I could learn anything if you just put me in front of something and I'll figure it out. And I've always held on to that.
One insurance premiums auditor that's strong enough to be relocated to areas that are probably struggling from the company perspective.
Right.
You know, I feel like most of the time those are people with like an accounting degree or something. I would imagine.
And you would think that, although the information that we were looking for was generally information that was already provided on government tax forms. So, you know, we were more spot checkers than anything. Point's still valid, though. You really, you know, you kind of got to do some poking around and ask some questions. And there was a method to the madness there. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So in e-commerce is your first real kind of exposure to, well, early e-commerce is your first exposure to, like, I want to dive into the digital sort of tech world.
Exactly.
So tell me about that development there and how that's
kind of coding, if you will, albeit very basic. So what's interesting is back in the day, Sam, you're like a baby at the time period we're talking about, right? You're
probably
if you were born at all, right? So this is 1997. Okay. So it's brand new, right? There's no YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, you've got some of these search engines, you know, Alta Vista. And
Google
wasn't even on the scene yet. You had Yahoo.
Okay, I'm picking up.
Different ones.
And this is e-commerce? There's e-commerce anything at that point, to your point?
No, not necessarily. But this is very early on, right? And we, so at work, I wasn't part of the programming group of employees. I was a manager of a store thing. So I didn't actually get to do any program. I was kind of managing a online shopping site for the company. And all of their e-commerce clients would go into that. But so on the side, the only way to learn was to go to school, right? And even in school, you learn theory. You didn't really learn how to code. Or you could go buy books that were like this.
Yep.
And I bought dozens and dozens of programming books. And I would spend my nights, my lunch hours, going through, doing tutorials and doing all that sort of thing. And in 1997, I was working for this company, and I did my first website for a cousin of my wife who had a business, and start open HTML tag, close,
share
it. And you know,
I feel like I, because of your question about the date, I feel like I need to overlap experiences. So I was born in 92.
Okay.
So to your point, probably around 06, I'm guessing. Yeah, that's where it would have been, between 06 and 08-ish. I'm picking up an XHTML book from the library.
Amazing.
And that's kind of where I'm, and it's a result of my friend Pam, our mutual friend at this point, Pam.
Yeah.
I didn't know who to talk to, so I basically call her and I'm like, you know, I think computers is the route I want to go. Where do I start? And she's a web developer, and so she's like, you know, XHTML, which is really just HTML. I don't even know. You might be able to explain better.
Yeah, I don't know what the X is for.
I know what it's for. It's for XML, but I don't know what it really changed. It's just I don't know what changed. It was supposed to be the next thing, but it's HTML anyway. So keep going. Yeah, open and close brackets. Hello world.
Yeah. Hello world. Exactly. So I started doing that, and then just started. Boy, you could not hardly hear that you do web stuff without somebody saying, "I need a website." And you know, of course, you were able to get thousands of dollars for websites, and so I just started doing that. Eventually ended up going to work for a company, a large manufacturer who had a bunch of different companies. And I was a web developer for the whole enterprise and spent, you know, up until 2012 working for them and learning a lot and growing. And it was a great experience, you know, really getting into programming, some, you know, ASP, VBScript, JavaScript, .NET, things like that. And, it was a great experience in a very safe environment for learning. It was great. So
that's
all along, I'm doing websites freelance, of course, you know, and then at a point I started, you know, realizing that build a website and then, well, where should I host it? Oh, I don't know. Go to GoDaddy or whatever. And I'm like, at a point I'm like, I'll host it. And so I still have clients from, you know, 15 years ago that I still have a site. Of course, we've changed their sites and different things, but yeah. So
tell me about one of the bigger things that's broken for you before. I'm just thinking through my development now that we're kind of layering it. And a lot of my development, frankly, has happened around something I brought on that was horribly broken, or something that ended up horribly broken that we had to kind of fix quickly. And so for some reason, you know, you talk about the manufacturing and the development and the AS, and you're talking about, you know, when you start bringing in .NET and VBScript, and now we're talking about something even beyond just your standard website development. So I'm thinking about all these interlocking mechanisms, and I'm kind of like, okay, well, at some point there's a layer of complexity that even a professional, I mean, it's going to break. Tell me about that big one.
Check your backups.
Test
multiple backups. And if you don't have backups, you need to call Sam and start taking backups. That's a whole...
Didn't expect it to go that way, but yeah, fair enough.
$25,000 it costs us to recover backups in a situation when I was with this manufacturer, and it was not good. That's all I'll say.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right. All right. All right.
We'll test backups. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough, fair enough, fair enough. We'll test your backup.
And
all right, that's
raid,
a good one.
That was a, you know, raid 10 situation where you should have been okay in the situation we were
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
But we were not okay. So, yeah, it was really ugly.
No, that's an interesting one. Yeah, so it's okay, so we're getting into some more geekanese for sure, but So somewhere in there, my path kind of diverged, I guess, because I, you know, you think of website development and whatnot, and the argument could have been made that I should have been a developer. But I think I've always liked hands-on, and I think there's a part of me that's liked breaking things and learning how things work more than maybe building them from scratch, per se. So
yeah, yeah.
I'm really good at, you know, you've got a web app or two or three web apps, and you're like, how do we make them play together in a secure fashion?
Yep.
And, or, you know, we have this app. We honestly don't know what it does. We think it's important. You know,
yep.
it's just, it help.
Yep.
And so almost that consulting sort of, yeah. like there's literally been a scenario before where went into a firm. They're like, we don't use this app. It can go away.
Right.
And then, you know, come to find out, it's like, no. The yeah. accounting department is using it for historical receivables.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah, and I had the track record to not just make it go away, but to kind of like quietly
yep.
shut it down to where somebody will eventually scream. So to your point, backups, like, so the reason I'm bringing all that up is because techs
yes.
that I relate with, they're always shouting at the top of their lungs, RAID is not a functional backup. And some people are kind of like, oh, they're paranoid and blah, 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 blah. Well, it's because RAID is designed for in the moment failover.
Right.
It's not as designed for historical. So, like, I worked at a data center downtown, and we had everything RAID. And for those that don't know, RAID is when you've got just imagine a world where you've got one computer and multiple hard drives. RAID is designed such that you can literally, if one of the hard drives fails, you can literally pull it out as the server is running.
Yep.
And plug a new one in.
Yep.
And it'll literally rebuild the data onto that hard drive, and you didn't skip a beat.
That's right.
Well, that's exactly what it's designed for, is
right.
you could have a single hard drive fail and yep. no big deal. What it's not designed for is, you know, disgruntled staff member deleted everything or ransomware, or, you know,
right.
there's a bunch of different scenarios, and you got to go back.
Yes, correct.
But it's interesting because tech sometimes, you know, sometimes we have these sayings, and sometimes they are built on paranoia.
Yes.
And then sometimes it's like other people, oh, you know, surely it's just built on paranoia. And then
right.
it's like not quite. But anyway, so moving on.
Yes.
So, okay, you, but you've learned, you know, I mean, you learned, and so that was the interesting thing. Cause I've, you know, I've learned too, there's been fun downtime, that fun learning experiences. So tell me then about,
Well, I'll jump in here and say, so at a point in, so I was with this manufacturer, and one of their, companies that I spent, you know, 90% of my time with was a e-commerce company. It was like a auction site for automobile memorabilia, like diecast cars, like NASCAR and different things. And in 2008, we suffered a big blow in that business in terms of revenue, because everybody was, you know, reserving cash at that point because of that crash. And so we lasted another 4 years.
And NASCAR memorabilia is that kind of like, we've got extra cash we're spending on it.
Exactly, right. And that disposable income went away. And so we, it was a slow decline in that business. And then when the manufacturer decided to shut that business down, they also decided to make some changes. They decided to let me go. My salary was quite high at that point, and they decided to let me go. And so, I had been, you know, doing websites all along on the side, you know, freelance, and already had kind of a hosting business in place, a maintenance. And so myself and my director of marketing in that company, we went on to partner up and develop ShoutCloud Studios. And then he and I did that together for a couple of years. And then he went on, he had a family situation where he had the ability to spend more time with his kids and not have to be the breadwinner. And so he kind of stepped out. And so I've been, you know, probably on my own with Shout Cloud Studios since maybe 2016, thereabouts. And that's been great, you know, been a good experience, been, you know, doing different things. I've got a couple folks that work for me, one now. I've had as many as three at a time work for me, and they, some of them, you know, worked overseas, lived overseas, and I've got one steady with me now, which you're aware of. And so, you know, for now, I'm, you know, the whole Shout Cloud's been great. I'm enjoying it. I'm having quite a resurgence at the start of the year. I've got a lot of clients that are excited about the economy to come, and I have confidence that some good changes are going to be coming, you know, in the months ahead, and are looking to invest some money and doing some different things. So it's been quite busy here so far in this new year. And, you know, I've been, you know, doing a lot of things here. So, okay. Yeah.
That's exciting. Yeah. So it's interesting too, the NASCAR thing, that actually makes a lot of sense. I had a CFO once tell me something very interesting that I it's really stuck with me. And he goes, you know, he was a smart cookie. And it's interesting too, because he had the level of smarts that, like, once he started talking, it clicked with you, like, oh, well, yep. Duh. Okay. I never thought about that. It's so simple. And yet it just eluded me. And he said, you know, you know how good the economy is based off of whether or not people are buying or selling motorcycles and boats.
Yep.
He goes, if you go to Craigslist and there's a bunch of motorcycles and boats on there, the economy is going south. Yep. If people are going out and buying motorcycles and boats, the economy is going north.
Great analogy. He's absolutely right. Yeah.
And, you know, NASCAR memorabilia, perfect example as to why, like, that when it's working and working right, that's probably a great ticket. I mean, because it's a, you know, what is the term now? You're not into commodities. You're into, oh, shoot. Now it's eluding me. That extra luxuries. Right?
Yeah.
And luxuries are higher ticket, higher profit margin, theoretically.
Yes.
But
right.
To your point about, you know, 08 and whatnot, that's the first thing to go whenever people are tightening down on the budget.
Totally. Yes. That's right.
Just like motorcycles and boats.
Absolutely. Yes.
That was, sorry, I'm looking back now. I was into silver at the time, which was going north, as was gold. And he goes, oh, I would never be in silver. I'd always be in gold. And I was like, well, why? And he goes, gold is a more steep. And he goes, and it's because of, you should know this, Sam, computers.
Yeah.
He's like, once the economy and gold is going up, it goes up even more because you still need it in computers.
Yeah.
And he's exactly right versus silver, which you really don't need in computers as much per se.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. Okay. So that situation happens and that puts you in an opportunity. What has you and your colleague at the time, your partner, decide it's time to go in on our own? Versus just go find another job? Yeah, did you try to find another job?
Yeah, I mean, I think we had, he had brought, we were good friends, of course, because we'd been working together from 01. I joined this company a month after 9/11 happened. And so from 01 to, you know, middle, late 2012, we'd be, you know, become fast friends. And we would work out together. We had a workout facility at our place of business, and we would work out together. We were just good friends. And he had brought several side projects. He was very much into cars and still is, and was very deep in the racing community locally and the vintage car community. And so he brought a lot of clients who needed websites, and we would work on them together. He would kind of project manage. And so it was a natural thing to say, hey, could we go get more of this? Can we do a bunch of this? And we were able to. We were, you know, together we were able to, you know, pull a lot of clients in and do a lot of projects, and it was great. Yeah.
That's cool. you know, to kind of keep overlapping just more for interest. So right around 08, so I was somewhere before this whole thing blows up. I'm an intern at Cerner.
Oh.
Really a kind of interesting thing. So they went into Maple Woods College, mm-hmm. and they were basically like, hey, we have a lack in engineering. And the school system, your curriculum is about 3 years behind. So we're hoping to create a transitional period.
That's great.
Where we take on interns and then you graduate and you're already in a full-time position.
Wow.
And out of 200 plus candidates, they whittled it down to 12. I was fortunate enough to be one of those.
That's still awesome.
A rather fascinating gauntlet. I still remember a dinner where they made very clear that it was not an interview. And then, you know, some of us were kind of, myself included, suspicious. And then the next day, there was so many less of us.
Yeah.
And I remember some wise guy, I don't think it was me, chimes up and goes, not an interview, guys. Not an interview. Where'd everybody else go? And so I had an internship. This is where things are kind of interesting. 08 happens, and I couldn't get a job to be a pizza flipper. It literally takes my dad to go into a pizza shop that had a help wanted sign up for like 4 months in a row to be like, my son is in your stack of applicants. Why do you still have the help wanted sign up?
Yeah.
And that's the only way I got back into the workforce.
Yeah.
It was fantastic, and I'm so thankful for it, and it definitely did get me back into the workforce.
Yeah.
And it was interesting too, cuz I guess maybe just two or three years, something like that. It takes me to get back into tech, which is interesting because the whole point of the internship, I had thought, was it would create, and I think it could have in a different time. But in that 08 period, I'm now realizing just how much tech was really affected.
Right. Yeah.
That may have been a part of why they discontinued my internship, which is an interesting thing. I always took it as a self-reflective sort of, which I think it was. There was plenty of other interns that didn't get their internship discontinued.
Okay.
So
the question everybody's asking right now is, do you make a mean pizza?
Do I make a mean pizza?
Yeah.
Probably could. Why not? I never made the dough. Made the dough. Everything was pretty much ready to go. I just put it all together.
You assembled. Assemble a mean pizza.
Assembled it.
Yeah.
I assembled it. To that end, though, so I will say, especially in the cases of like Papa Murphy's and maybe some of these other places, this is probably a known trick, but oftentimes you can purchase a pre-assembled item and sub out all the ingredients, and typically you'll save a few bucks off of if you'd just done a custom thing.
Industry trick. There you go.
You know, just a fun little insider thing for
you. There you go. Yeah, yeah.
That was, And for Papa Murphy's specifically, you want to let, if the dough comes right out of the refrigerator, you want to wait and let it rise.
Okay.
A lot of people will make the mistake of taking it home and cooking it right away. You want to give it an hour if you've got the patience.
Papa Murphy's is good pizza. Yeah.
It's great pizza. It's great. I still love that pizza, frankly.
Yeah, exactly.
That one was, that was an interesting experience. There was, I don't know about you, since we're kind of talking about it, the managers have been a really interesting experience for me in that I've had some, and there's really not been, I don't know, of a huge in between. I've had some amazing managers, and I've had some managers that like definitely insecure and projecting those insecurities. And no real, again, kind of happy medium. There wasn't, that I can really think of, ever a manager that just kind of like coast.
You know, it's interesting as people, you know, we cannot see the forest through the trees. And we really, in cases, I mean, I look back at times in my life where I was super insecure had no idea. And looking back, perhaps a little more critically than I should, I'm like, oh man, I wouldn't have liked me either. I wouldn't have hired me either. I can look back and see things that I couldn't see back then. But as people, we really need to rely on those around us and invite input, right? We can be introspective, which everybody's not introspective necessarily. And sometimes being introspective can be bad if we don't have a balanced approach to looking inside, right? But people become managers and everybody brings all of their stuff, good or bad, to the table. And sometimes people have no clue how bad it is, right? You can have a lot of bad managers. There's a lot of people out there who are not in the right role for their personality or their mindset or their disposition, right? And so, yeah, there's a lot of bad managers out there and some good ones, you know.
100%. By the way, I can make a mean hamburger. I went from the pizza place to being a cook at Hy-Vee.
Oh,
and I tried to take pride in my work. Actually, the whole reason I love a mean prime rib roast now is I didn't even cook it. I just, he puts it in the oven and he's like, I'm leaving for the day. Just so you know, this is the temperature it's meant to be. Not a degree above.
Yeah.
And not a degree below. He's like, if you're going to make a mistake, maybe a degree below, because it'll probably cook an extra degree after you take it out of the oven.
Okay.
And for anybody that doesn't know, to cook something within 1 degree, and you're not supposed to open that oven all the time, right? We all know why you don't do that.
Yep.
But to cook something within a degree in the oven, that is not easy. So from then on out, I've had a whole new respect for a good prime rib roast.
Do you make a good prime rib?
I could if given the opportunity. I probably should. I've never thought too much about it. Frankly, the moment I stopped working there, I just kind of stopped cooking in general, which I don't know why. I'll do deviled eggs for the family. And the thing that I think I enjoyed was, while you've got the recipe and that's a awesome baseline, I just always love.
Yeah.
So like I'll put lemon juice or vinegar in my deviled eggs.
Yep.
And sometimes maybe some tahini.
Yep.
And it's because all of those are like have got a little bit of a zesty tang.
Yep.
Versus the mayonnaise, which is like a polar opposite of that. And so those two together are a really fun combo.
You have to get your fat and your acidity in balance, which is what.
Yeah.
Yes.
100%. 100%.
Too much of one or the other, and it can be off-putting. So balancing those is good. Yeah.
To go the opposite way with myself and also to give people some visibility into just kind of that moment of I'll make myself the bad guy. I noticed really quickly that veggies, so my goal was to cook such that people would eat it. Why would you cook it if people don't eat it? Like that's, you want to eat it. I want to cook it such that you eat it.
Yeah.
Veggies would never get eaten. Doused in cheese and salt and butter, they would get eaten and they would come back for seconds and they would say, I need to get my veggies in, right? But if I didn't douse it in butter and salt and cheese, it would not get eaten and it would sit there and then I would have inventory go bad.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, why did I put veggies out?
Yeah.
So just a fun item. For those of you going out saying, I'm getting my veggies in, let's not lie to ourselves.
That's great. We've never talked about this. We're going to have more conversations about your former work life for sure.
Yeah. Well, that was the other, the other thing was, I've got a fun story here too. If you have a meal that's bad and you need a refund, I totally understand that.
Yeah.
Just know that you've given the chef or cook an excuse, because there are plenty of people out there that want a refund, quote unquote, just because they don't want to have to pay for the food they've eaten.
Yeah, right.
And as a chef or cook, it's really kind of hard to gauge, was my food actually bad or did they just want a refund?
Right.
So if you ever want to lesson for the cook.
Yeah.
I've had at least one scenario where I made an absolute point to pay the bill just because, and I told him too, I said, hey, I want the cook to know he could have done better on this one.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pay for it just so the cook knows.
That's a good,
he could have done better on this one.
That's a great point. Yeah. Well, yeah.
So anyway,
I'll just moving forward, I am finding myself, you know, the business is fine. It's a great two-man business. And you and I have talked a lot about growing and not growing and should we be growing and how to grow, do different things. And I found myself in a place where I'm really coming alive as a person in pursuing relationships, you know, at church, friendships at church. And, you know, I'm part of Abundant Life in Lee Summit, Missouri here. And that has been doing that for a couple of years. And I just really pursuing deep, you know, intimate, emotionally relationships with, you know, people like you and people at church. And I'm a leader of a program that they have at Abundant Life called Regeneration, which is a program about addiction recovery, and not just like the hard addictions like drugs and alcohol, but emotional addictions, you know, pride and fear and anxiety and, you know, all the things. And we, every week we dive deep into these things and overlay scripture and have times of sharing. And it's really, for me right now, that is the most exciting thing in my life, is helping others, giving back and helping others. And your business is great. Like I said, I'm really excited and having fun with it. Doing some new things with AI that, you know, it's brand new, never been able to do before. That's all very exciting. But for me, I'm finding relationships is what I'm most passionate about today, and helping and encouraging others. And that's been great.
That's so cool, because I think that's one of the best. It kind of comes back to, I think that's one of the cooler integrations with business.
Yeah.
Is that relationship piece.
Yeah, and you know, and you do that so well, and it's something that so many times I say, like, what would Sam do, right? I mean, and because you do that so well, we talk about that so much, and I definitely want to do more of that. I have a lot of clients that I don't interface with much because I don't need to, and you know, inspire me to do that more, even when I don't need to. And that's definitely one of the things that I'm working to do more of and better this year, is interface more, even in cases where I don't need to, right? Because ultimately, it's about relationship. Everything's about relationship.
100%. I think there's a real opportunity. It's crazy, too, for something like web, right? To your point, that has changed so much and come so far, I still find myself personally seeing a bit of an opportunity for web and web developers in general, because a lot of what I see is kind of solo web developer sort of thing,
right?
It done a certain way for a certain customer. And then, you know, it's let me put it this way. A lot of what we've seen for folks as kind of a hark back to, you know, check your backups.
Yep.
A lot of what we see is people's domain names will lapse, and then it's like, okay, well, where's your web developer? And then their eyes will like glaze over, like, what's a web developer? And it's like, whoa, the person that put together your website. And then it's like, who is that? And then they're like, you know, they're going through the old school Rolodex or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they're calling around to find out that person hasn't been doing that for 5 years, and it was like a 10-year renewal on the domain. And it's like, okay, well, where's the domain name hosted? Or what's worse is it's expired now, so now somebody else has bought it and is holding it hostage.
Right.
I think we actually seen this pretty recently. Well, interestingly enough, I just created a monitor recently. And one of our clients that we don't manage their domain name for because they didn't want it, I ended up reaching out to him and say, hey, did you know your domain name is expiring in 6 days? And he goes, no, what's that? And yeah. It's interesting, and it saved them a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And I don't know where I guess I'm kind of getting here is I think there's still a surprising amount of opportunity in the web development space.
Yeah.
Because there still is a lot of that happening where.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, that's awesome. The relationship piece and the web development side, I think those will marry nicely.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So, that's awesome. Some of the stuff that you're doing at Regen and that's very exciting.
Yeah. So what, another interesting thing, that I'm kind of thinking about doing, I'll be curious. This is whoever watches this will see. I'm really thinking about, applying my Regen experience and specifically going out. There's, a number of addiction recovery centers throughout the Kansas City metro area and throughout the country. And I've thought about marrying my business with my addiction recovery passion, right? And actually going and so a lot of these addiction recovery inpatient situations, somebody gets out of their treatment or whatever, and then, the treatment center will say, okay, well, now you're on your own. Go find a program to be a part of, whether it's, an AA or something, right? And a lot of times these guys don't know where to go, and so one of the things I have a desire to do is to go visit all the addiction treatment centers in Kansas City, just get online and do a search, right? Make a list, and then go personally meet the directors of these and tell them about Regen. And say, hey, Regen is a free, Christian-based program weekly. We would love to be a reference where you can refer your graduates of your program to, for further enhance their experience and continue to grow. And so, but also in developing those relationships with, these counseling centers and these recovery centers. Oh, by the way, just FYI, I provide a number of services, that if you have need of, I'm happy to help you or be a sounding board if you have questions or what have you, and maybe see it as an opportunity to marry the two and really kind of go into that niche and provide services for something I'm passionate about, right? So that's a thought that I've been playing with.
Well, I think to that end, there could be a real need potential for that almost from an app perspective, too, because I'm now thinking of some sort of DoorDash, Uber, or Airbnb style app where, you think about a ward or a suicide hotline sort of a thing, or, these are designed to help people kind of in the moment. And I'm not saying they don't do a good job of plugging people into. I'm just saying that kind of a traditional sort of path is, hey, here's a phone number for a therapist or a psychiatrist, or here's somebody we really recommend. Maybe they're lucky and they happen to know of some local church-like group or meeting. I don't know if there's a really sort of like a standardized interface of like, hey, if you go here, or if you open up this app, you can plug in with existing networking organizations like an AA style,
right,
where you can have your support structure outside of, because that's what we really know. And there's amazing studies even just the soldiers that came back from Vietnam,
yes,
were all addicted to opioids as a result of having,
right,
that,
yeah,
when they were overseas. But they came off of them very, very quickly once they were back, because,
yep,
they had a social fabric to plug back into.
Absolutely.
Only those that maintained their addiction were those that didn't have a social fabric to,
exactly,
plug back into.
Right.
And so while the treatment is huge, it's really about that support structure,
yep,
after the fact, yep. that keeps it going.
So important. Yeah, absolutely. So important. Yeah. So I mean, we'll talk about that more in our calls in the weeks and months ahead, but I definitely feel led to go in that direction and I'm excited to help people, but if I can help businesses, you know, in whatever way they have need, I'd certainly like to do that as well. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So as we kind of start to wrap up here,
yep.
we have a standardized question or two.
Go.
So the motto at LockBod is, if we have seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yep.
Who's been a giant in your life that has enabled you to see further?
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I have to give credit to God. I mean, there have been people, you know, different periods in my life. You've been one of those, at a time. And, but my life verse from the Bible is Proverbs 16:9. A man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. And I really, since I was a boy, held that in my heart. Like, I'm going to try and go do the best that I can do. I'm going to make my plans and I'm going to do whatever. But I'm going to be open to God diverting me and going this way. And I've seen that a number of times, Sam, in good situations and bad situations where I've been diverted from trouble, potential trouble. And so I got to give credit to God. And then, I am thankful for everybody. I'm even thankful for the situations where I didn't like the guy or whatever, because it's an opportunity to learn. You know, if we will humble ourselves and quit thinking so highly of ourselves, there is so much to learn from every interaction we have that's meaningful, good or bad, and allows us an opportunity. If we'll reflect, we can fix some things and be better after circumstances and situations. You know what I mean? But we got to lay down our defensiveness. We got to lay down our pride. We got to lay down our woulda, shoulda, you got to put all that down and say, okay, how could I be better from this situation? What's the takeaway here that makes me a better person, right? So for me, almost everybody is an opportunity to change and be better, you know? So
that's cool.
Yeah.
So then the other thing would be, what's kind of a general rule of thumb or guiding light that you've kind of followed that has remained true again and again and again?
Well, I think we have to have a handle on expectations in our lives. When we create expectations in our mind over situations and things, and those expectations don't come to pass, they have the potential to wipe us out for days, weeks, months, right? And so I hold expectation. I don't expect much from folks. And so when I approach people about things, whether it's friendship or business, or I have very little expectation in terms of I've got to have this result, or I'm going to be mad, or I'm going to be sad, or whatever. I just try and pursue what I think is right, and then see what happens. And I feel like that's a great place to be, right? Because the pressure is off for me trying to produce an outcome. And so the pressure is off of me, but the pressure is off of you in this, you know, as an example, that you have to do something for me to satisfy whatever it is I want, right? And so I find that when I approach people without being too invested in the desired outcome, I'm more relaxed. Things go smoother. And a lot of times things work out great. So, yeah.
Sorry, just fun. Are you familiar with Stoicism at all by chance?
No. I mean, I've heard the term, but I haven't studied that. No.
There's a book recommendation. I'll throw it out there since we're talking on it. I have to pull it up, but it's a great intro, if you will, to Stoicism. And I hate to, Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday.
I mean, he's right. Absolutely.
And it's what you've discovered on your own, which is fantastic. There's a whole series of philosophers called the Stoics, if you will,
yep.
that basically talk about that. So that's That's fantastic. Cool. All right. Well, I think on that, we'll wrap it up.
That's great.
Bye, everybody.
This has been so much fun, Sam. I love what you're doing this. And
thank you. Thank you for being on. Thank you so much, Joseph.
Yeah. Thank you for being my friend. And I love you so much, Sam. Yeah.
Love you too, man.
Hello, everyone. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.